What you drinking?
It is the Laphroaig Cerdas. It's their specialty bottle they put out.
Look at you all fucking fancy. I just got a white Russian. Springtime's coming up, so what should we do in the springtime? Should we let down our hair and take long strides in the courtyard? How should one live their life during the springtime?
I think we should all do the things we know that move our chi individually, right? Because everything's been kind of dormant. And no matter what you have to do to get that chi going, that's the thing that's right for you. I often advertise it to the patients as sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Moves it quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you move your chi?
How do I move my chi? Gardening. That's what I do to move chi. This is going to be great. You got to ask the hard-hitting questions.
Tell me some stories about Chinese medicine. I guess here I'll start.
Good. I'm glad.
So this is probably my favorite story from Father. It's like you'd have a lot of people that they'd have a patient come in and it's like, oh, there are so many things wrong. It seems like everything is wrong with them. I just don't know what to do. I don't even know where to start. Or sometimes you'd see students in the clinic that they come up with a diagnosis and their diagnosis is like 10 lines long. And you're like, what do you do? Where do you even start? And so Father would always tell the story that he was like, say you have a net, like a fishing net. It's all tangled, so many knots. What do you do? How do you approach it? Well, first, what you should do is start by untangling the largest knot. And once you do that, many of the smaller knots will become untangled automatically as a consequence. And I really like that story as a way of this is how we can approach patients, that if it seems like everything is wrong with them, just find the biggest knot and focus on untangling that. And then everything else may work out. So if they have spleen qi deficiency with liver overacting, with underlying kidney yang deficiency, with dampness accumulating, with heart blood deficiency, just find the biggest one. And because everything's connected, once you fix that biggest thing, a lot of the other problems might resolve themselves automatically. And I feel like this is a mistake a lot of people make, is that when they try to address every little thing, it just waters down the treatment. Whether you're doing with acupuncture, you start using 50 different points because you're trying to address every little symptom, or whether you do it with herbs and you try to modify your formula, adding an herb for every little thing, the body just doesn't know what to do with it. The body gets confused. So instead, just focus on one thing and treat that one thing, and then that will have a cascading effect that balances out the whole body.
Right. So I think this is actually one of like the biggest things that maybe I didn't necessarily have trouble with when I first started in private practice, but I definitely very quickly within like year one, year two, noticed that I needed a lot of help with. Because as a pretentious cunt in regards to like the philosophical nuances of the medicine, I really want that like perfect diagnosis for the person. So they come in, they sit down, they start to tell you their life story, and you want to dissect every little thing, right? Oh, their stomach, it's a little too much heat in the stomach. Is the heat originating there? The lung channel probably has some problems over there. How are those two connected? That's yang, ming, and tai yin. Seems like Ren 8, oh, they've got a ghost living in their Ren 8. Let's throw that in there. Their third toe from the left is purple. What is that, right? So you build all those like super complex diagnostic things. And that was kind of like my hallmark thing that I loved, was give me 57 symptoms and I'm going to deduce them and figure out like which one meridian is the original one. And sometimes that's just unrealistic. And what worked for me really well to help me go for that easiest thing, or that most on the top surface thing, was really like listening to their chief complaint. Because somebody will come in and they're like, hey, my back hurts, right? And then we start diagnosing, like, you don't even sit down with them. You're like, okay, kidney meridian, right? Well, it's the back, it's the kidney. And then you sit down and they start telling you about their like gastric reflux and how they're like getting naked and yelling on top of things. And so you're like, oh, the stomach meridian has a branching channel that goes from the stomach meridian into the spine. It wraps around. Could this be the thing? And then 10, 15 minutes later, you've got 57 things pulled out, 102 herbs, and you're ready to like use 3,000 needles on this person. When really you can like deduce that down. What's the low-hanging fruit here? What's the thing that really keeps me on check with their chief complaint, and also the simplest fix that makes sense for the person's diagnosis? And I think that's a really good lesson, or it was a really good lesson for me. because I want to get into the philosophical nuances, but that person is there because they have a backache. So if I want to stay in business or I want to make a happy customer, because at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm a waiter, right? You come to my restaurant, you sit down, you tell me what you want. I had better deliver that thing. So for me, I, in the beginning, really wasn't listening. I was like, oh, the patient's lying to me. Wang Fujing says that I need to like take the pulse and don't listen to the person talk, right? But Wang Fujing wasn't a waiter in a restaurant. He didn't have this kind of like contemporary society that we have where at the end of the day, the patient has to leave happy and want to come back for me to have rice in my bowl at night. So yes, I absolutely agree with you in regards to that.
Yeah, because I remember that happening once early on where usually I would think, oh, I want to come up with a perfect diagnosis. I want to make the most elegant treatment possible, the most elegant point selection that just perfectly balances this patient. And then I remember once I had like my neighbor wanted to come see me. He like came at like 10 p.m. I was really tired. I actually don't like him very much, but I thought, oh, I'll treat him anyway. And he was like, oh, I have these stomach problems. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to do like stomach 36, REN 12, LI4, all this. Like, I feel like a first year intern could come up with a better treatment plan than what I did.
Probably.
Because it was just so simplistic. Afterwards, he was like, I feel so amazing. This is so great. And I was like, oh, God damn it.
Sometimes you have to be that great, like, lakeside master Lee Shirjun nailing the fucking diagnosis and figuring out that it's actually stomach 24 is the correct point. But sometimes you just have to move chi and sit with the patient. And sometimes that's the actual treatment. So it's like, I never try to discount that. And I look for it often. You know, I'm like pretentious as fuck. I hate four gates. And when it works, I won't sleep at night. I'm so fucking angry about how it worked. But then when you get into like the if you read into it and see like, oh, yeah, you know, this patient, they had this thing here that, you know, the four gates really opening up and circulating chi at works. And their chief complaint, it wasn't their face. And the LI is, or the LI4 is the command point of the face. And the liver three, according to the imagery people, is the head with the eyeball. So it's like, one of those beautiful things about the medicine is there's always an answer there if you go digging deep enough. But I want it to be more complicated than stomach 36 and REN 12 as well. I want it to be real fucking obscure.
I don't know. Do you have any good Tauntaun stories? Do you have any good China stories?
What the fuck did I do in China? I think I drank the whole time. Hang on. I'll try to inject a really shitty story from China here and see how it goes. And I'm just going to make it in a way that you can edit it and use it if you want. So hang on. So it's like this one time when I was with Tauntaun in China, and we're following this doctor who's like the super fancy, knows all the herbs medicine guru guy, right? And we've got this patient, and the patient is returning for their, I think it was their second or third visit. People come more often in China, so this was like probably day 10 in the person's third visit, and we got to review the chart notes beforehand, and the chart was literally, Chinese characters are very small. And the chart was three pages front and back filled with symptomology and pertinent medical history. And I was reading through it and I'm like, oh, so this is definitely like, this has got to be maybe like, this is, there's pericardium involvement, there's large intestine involvement, there's like, there's gallbladder brain melt going on here. There are so many things. Look at all these, right? Like all of these crazy symptoms. There's channel diagnostics, there's Zhang Fu diagnostics, just intense shit. And the person comes in and I'm like talking with the doctor. So this is their third visit. I'm not expecting anything to have changed. And it was like one of these things where it's miraculously, this miraculous shift, right? And he did it just with herbal medicine, and he did it just with a patent medicine, which if you're a dick like me, patent medicines are just horseshit. Just I wouldn't even feed them to my chickens, right? Because I want to use the raw substance. I'm not wasting my time with these pills. Who knows where they were made? He gave him this patent medicine. And the guy made this like miraculous recovery. Oh, his chief complaint was like autoimmune disease, right? So it was like even more, it was probably like he was complaining of lupus at this point or some kind of bullshit, right? And the guy comes in and he's like, oh no, things are so miraculously better. I can walk now. My butterfly rash on my face or whatever is better. Hey, wonderful. So I'm like, what is this like ancient, crazy patent medicine that you went for? And the doctor's, oh, Hou xiang zheng qi shui. He says shui at the end because the patent medicine in China is actually a liquid, right? So we would say Hou xiang zheng qi san, right? And I'm like, that was so fucking far from this this pathomechanism and diagnosis to lead to this herbal medicine. And I'm like, how the fuck did you get this? Like, of all this crazy shit, it's three pages, and so little of it is actually like yangming or like stomach related, right?
Yeah.
How the fuck did you get to this one? And the doctor's like, it was a very confusing. Okay, I don't know. Is it PC? Can I do a Chinese accent here? It's authentic, and I'm Chinese. For this, I identify as Chinese. So he says, oh, you know, it's a very long paper, so many lines. Chinese characters so small, very hard to read. It's handwriting, so many symptoms. Your pulse says a soggy tongue, thick coat. We're in Chengdu at the time. He's a very damp, very hot. He has a thick coat. Oh, must be Hou Xiang Zheng Qi San. Are you fucking kidding me? You read all that shit and you couldn't figure out heads or tails. So you went with fucking Hou Xiang Zheng Qi San, and this guy made, like, I'm not even joking, like a miraculous, right? Like shit blew my fuck. I don't even believe in acupuncture now or Chinese medicine. This shit would change my mind. So so I asked him, you know, like, come on, give me more. Where's that nugget? Where's that pearl? And his thing was like, you know, sometimes you have the qi hua, and the qi hua mechanism can get bogged down, clogged, whatever. What are the most likely things to do that? Maybe damp phlegm, right? And so he looked for that low-hanging fruit, that little tiny diagnosis, that thing. Maybe it was the oldest symptom going on, but it led him to that thing very quickly. And then to some extent, I think he just said, fuck it. Right, and tried this thing and got real lucky. But I think that's wild in our medicine, that we can like kind of try those super very simplistic to us things that can have very impactful big changes for the patient.
So one of the Tauntaun stories I really liked, he was talking about when he was in school, they were following around the supervisor, the supervising doctor, and he asked one of the students, what are the ingredients in this formula? So the student pulled out a book and started flipping through to look up the ingredients of the formula. So the teacher came and grabbed the book and then threw it at his face. And so I always, whenever people like bring out their ADR or their frickin' HBKIM, ADR. I always think about that story. Or when people are like, why don't we do things like we do in China? We should be learning the medicine the way they teach it in China. I'm like, yeah, we should. Because right? I'm going to throw a fucking book at your face when you don't know the right answer.
Those people think it's Taoist mysteries on the mountaintop, which it could be for only like four easy payments of $799.95.
Do you remember that story about when you gave Karen Guizhertong?
For her sore throat?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, do you want to tell that story?
Do I get to do the I'm going to do a Vietnamese impersonation this time. Is that okay? So, and then another very interesting, like really strong lesson for me came when I think at this point I'm how many semesters of intern are you? I'm like
10. Oh, intern last year.
I'm like later intern at this point, I believe. This is two or three. Like I'm getting ready to graduate in a short amount of time. And I am not one to fuck up when it comes to like diagnostic or like movement, like figuring out which herbs to use or that kind of thing. So a person who's very dear and close to me has a sore throat. And this is like, I don't know if you've noticed, but fucking Sang Ju Yin is real early on in the book of formulas and strategies, right? Like, I don't think anybody should be practicing if you can't take care of a sore throat. This is like, you should be able to diagnose qi level, qi stage things and accurately see them, know what to do for them, not have to reach for the ADR. Hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people default to Yin Chao San in that situation.
Right.
But I can see either one.
You can, right? And I'm just saying. So this person who we both know quite well, because it's my wife, had a sore throat at the time, and it was like she does everything fucking extreme. It's so dramatic. She has the I'm swallowing glass bullshit going on in her throat, right? And of course, like we're early on in our relationship. I gotta flex. I'm going to treat this shit. You're going to get herbs and acupuncture, which she's an herbalist and an acupuncturist. You're going to get treated so well, it's going to magically go away. Fuck, there's no way. I literally sat down, wrote this beautiful, elegant formula, probably Yin Chao San at the time, and does nothing. Do the acupuncture, does fucking nothing, like nothing whatsoever. So I have her come in on my clinic shift with a will-not-be-mentioned Vietnamese practitioner, like a teacher who's the attending on the shift. And I love this guy. I'm like, I'm sold. He's probably one of the greatest practitioners that's alive in our lifetime, right? So I tell him, I'm like, I've used these formulas. Like we're at formula number 3 at this point. I've used these formulas. I've done these points. Like we're not getting any change. If anything, I'm only making it worse. And he looks at her. He takes the pulse. He looks at me. He looks at the notes that I've given him from the side. And he's like, let us go for a walk outside. I'm like, all right. I don't see where this is going, but let's go do that. So we go stand outside. And I'm like, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, waiting for him to give me the fucking secrets of the universe here. We're just sitting there. He ain't saying shit. Minute goes by. 5 minutes goes by. I'm like, so, teacher, is there something I'm supposed to be grasping at? What did you say her chief complaint? It's a sore throat. She's swallowing glass every time. It's horrible. It's the worst thing ever. Doesn't respond to any of the conventional things that we know. How does it feel outside? This is cold. It's like San Diego, but it's like maybe this is like fall or winter. And this is like, I don't know how cold San Diego gets anymore, but it felt cold. Like it was like 50 degrees probably, but it was chilly. Like I had a hoodie on, I had a scarf on. We were all worried about our wind gate things going on. So he's like, do you think maybe she has a sore throat due to cold? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? It's a sore throat. It's red, it's swollen, it's hot, like it's got to be. Look at the classics here. The Yin Chao San releases heat. This is a thing we want to use cold. Imagine, if you will, maybe the universe and the energy from a nature has a bigger play on the body. Okay, what do you want me to use? Kui Zi Tang. For real, my girlfriend, who I like a whole bunch, has the worst sore throat in the world. And you want me to use the spicy decoction? Like this is a literal like logic of thought for you. Are you kidding me? And so everybody kind of knows where this story's going right now, but it's like, yeah, we gave her Gui Zhi Tang. I think we gave her like enough cinnamon to kill somebody, and it was an immediate improvement. Like within 2 hours or something, 10 hours, the thing's gone. She's noticing improvement right off the bat. So it's a lot of the times it's that trying to get out of your head philosophical banter of knowing what you've read and all the ancient texts and all the books and knowing what Machiocha is going to do and which meridian Wang Juyi is going to feel and all these things. Sometimes it's just like looking around you and looking for the low-hanging fruit, the answer that is the easiest.
So maybe you can help me pay some bills. How do you feel about the book Applied Channel Theory in Chinese Medicine by Wang Juyi?
Do you want my honest opinion?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to give you my honest opinion. There's probably no book more important or a text that needs to be visited by the students at an earlier time than Applied Channel Theory. And I wish they were paying me for that, but I don't think they need to.
I guess what's in it that makes it so important?
So I think that in Western civilization-based Chinese medical school, we do put too much of an emphasis on Zangfu diagnosis in regards to acupuncture treatments. I think this is not even arguable at this point. And I think one of the very beautiful things that Master Wang did in his life was to relate and see the world of Chinese medicine in everyday nature and be able to convey it in a way to help people understand it. I don't know who said it. It might be Einstein, but somebody said, if you really understand something, you should be able to explain it very simplistically. And if you were listening to somebody explain something and it's too convoluted, quit listening to them. And so Master Wang had a really good following of students in which he gave these lectures to, in which he broke down things so easily and so succinctly that really helped people like grasp the concept, a very crazy Chinese medical concept, and put it into a functional use in the clinic on the table. And one of the things that the book does is it breaks down these very hardcore, archaic rules that we have within our medicine, and then gives us like a functional understanding of what's happening in the body and how it applies to looking for, you know, symptoms, root cause, that kind of thing. Then it goes into, so Master Wong's major thing was channel palpation, like understanding which channel, going for the least number of needles. And it gets into that later in the book, but I think the most important part of the book is, so let me back up. If you take into account like the book Fundamentals of Chinese Medicine, which I think they make you read very early in your Chinese medical schooling, it kind of just has blatant statements, right? The lung faces the 100 vessels. That's one of the spleen's job is to keep blood within the vessels, this kind of stuff. And then it doesn't really go into too much. It doesn't explain it. It just said, these are these rules. They were handed down by Qi Bo, you know, learn this thing. If somebody's coughing up blood, maybe use a Xi cleft point, but there's no backing, nothing to help you really understand it or learn it. And this is the gap that Master Wong kind of fills in the best way that I've seen. And then that book, that specific book, I believe is his student Jason Robertson wrote it, which is really just like, translation and a compilation of all these things that he got when he was one-on-one with Master Wong. So it's also just the continuation of a really great piece of art from within the medicine.
Yeah, so just some background story on this. This is a book, Applied Channel Theory by Wang Juyi, and written or translated by Jason Robertson. And this is a book that I've really promoted on my YouTube channel, and I think that everybody should read this book. And just kind of the background story of this is I was introduced to this book by Patrick. I think it was in like my second year of school. I was in that points class where we were basically memorizing point prescriptions, that we were going through Machioche and memorizing these are the points you use for this pattern or these are the points that you use for this condition. And I was kind of like, yeah, I'm sure this is useful when you're studying for boards. I'm sure this is going to come up on my licensing exam test. But I was really frustrated. I was like, this is not Chinese medicine. This is not the way that Chinese medicine is supposed to be. And so I went to Patrick, who was like a year or 2 years ahead of me. And I was like, this is not real Chinese medicine. How do I learn real Chinese medicine? And he was the one who recommended this book. And I think it was really great because like you were working at the library at the time. So I just like checked it out from the library. And I think you like hacked into the system and let me check it out for 10 years. So like I technically never had to return it. But that's how I got into that book. And it's a great book. Everybody I've recommended it to has really loved it. It's like when I read it, every chapter was like, oh, my God, this is like so simple yet so profound. How has nobody ever explained it to me this way before? Like this is just so simple. So I do think that this is a book that everybody should read. Maybe don't read it in your first semester, but maybe after your first year, after you've gone through points 1, 2, and 3, this could be a really good book to read. So I'll leave a link to it in the description below. Spoiler alert, this is going to be an Amazon affiliate link. So I think they give me like – if you click on that link, I think they give me like a 4.5% commission, which is not much, but
– it adds up.
But I do think this is like the best book on Chinese medicine, that everybody should read it.
I think if you want to, I think that anyone can practice acupuncture successfully. And I think that even your chiropractors or your doctors who take like a weekend course and learn a point prescription for headaches and or only use the same 10 or 12 points for every single person, you know, they're going to at the end of the day, they're going to get lucky and they're going to move qi. And so you could like anyone can be successful in that, like, I can get 1 out of 10 patients to really get better or do that kind of thing. If you truly want to begin to dive in deeper and understand the nuances of the medicine or see it through the philosophical lens of someone within the culture, and not only that, but like in the culture in an ancient way to understand, because there are stories about Master Wong like walking through the park, and he's walking along, and there's a stream, and he sees the rock in the stream, and he's like, oh, look, it's a this is like the she cleft point, right? Because the water is being funneled into a specific area and having to break through it. So it's you know, when me and you walk through the park, we're like, leaves, man, and that tree's got energy and the sun's up and that's yang. But he's like looking at the very specific tiny little subtleties and really gleaning that information, because it is the lens that shapes his whole world. And so if we want to get really into Chinese medicine, to really live and breathe it and see it, to be a good practitioner, you had better not be able to go through a day without being able to describe a natural process through that lens. And I think that the book is a really good jumping off point, because it starts to get you to do that. It makes things more tangible. But then most importantly for me, it promotes the student to get on hand with the meridian, to feel the channel. Imagine that lung six can move a little, right? That point's not static. It doesn't stay right there. I think one of the only things that I saw in school that was kind of close to this was like the Japanese teacher put lung seven in a different place, or stomach 40 was a little bit lower, that kind of thing. But then you get out into the real world and you start feeling people and touching these meridians and feeling the subtle differences, and like the heart meridian and in different types of people, or people with different jobs, really. And you can see that this thing, it's not static. It does move around. The disease gets in there and it changes the physical construct of the system.
How does one learn palpatory skills?
So I think this is like a two-part answer for me. One is, this medicine was founded on like a Padawan learner following a master, right? And you are like assigned to this person and you live with them day and night. You eat meals with them. You sleep in a dormitory with them. You see the patients they do, and they impart to you over a lifetime, this kind of thing. And then it is your job to repeat that. So they don't do that shit in America. They don't do that shit in China anymore. So it's like, this is a very different time that we live in which for the most part, if you think of Chinese medicine history, of like, let's just say it's real fucking long, and for 99% of it, it had been conveyed in that function, shit's real different right now. And I think that is a double-edged sword. It allows us to have a ton of information that we can pack inside of a lot of books and make more obtainable. I mean, there's a point when somebody, Cao Cao, burned some books, and then Chinese medicine was lost to a whole group of people for a while. Like, we don't really have that issue. We're not going to lose all these books anytime soon. But in the same token, you're losing the nuance of that master and student magic, right? So that would be the first part of my answer. The second part of my answer would be the story that made me believe in pulse diagnosis. And I don't remember who the teacher was. So this is also like, I think I was an observer in the clinic, and I had read for a long time about pulse diagnostics philosophically, right? Theoretical pulse diagnosis. And I'm like, yeah, this might be a thing for like the Taoists that meditate on the mountain for 24 years and then their heart becomes still enough that they can feel a slippery pulse. Sure. But maybe this isn't like a thing that I'm going to get. So whoever the practitioner was, we were seeing the patient, and they made me and the other patient or the other student each hold one pulse. And they're like, I'm going to needle this point. I remember very vividly they needled kidney six. And no joke, it wasn't that the pulse changed. The fucking artery moved. Like, it literally – so I don't know if you've ever read or heard of that one diagnosis that's a yin chao pattern. And so it always comes with, like, insomnia or some kind of shit. But it's like one of the diagnostic markers of this is that the Tsun position of the pulse will feel much more medial than the Guan position. So it's like angled in towards the midline of the wrist. And so their pulse felt like that, which I didn't know at the time was a thing, but it legitimately felt like it was like deviated. But I thought this was the person's normal. And then this motherfucker needles kidney six, and the fucker straightened, like the Tsun Guan Shi came right into alignment, perfectly parallel to the ligament. So that shit blew my fucking mind. And this became a thing for me when I was, I would say, like a baby acupuncturist, is I would sit there, take the pulse, like ask my questions, look up tongue. and then make my diagnosis and my point prescription. I think this is the points that the person's body is asking me for. And then I would attempt to like take the pulse, and then I'd needle one point and then go take the pulse again. Did anything change? No, it didn't. So I'd needle the second point, take the pulse. Did anything change? And then maybe it did, right? Or maybe I moved my points around and then something actually changed. And this became big for me because I kind of have that maybe like scientific mind where I want things to fit into a mechanical nature. I want positive feedback. I don't need esoteric. I don't know how my like intuition is doing. I don't need the person to say, I think I feel better. Like I need fucking force feedback, right? So this was a method that I used early on that worked out really well for me. And then that actually became the way that I got into palpating the meridian myself. And so this is probably closer around the time when me and you met and I read the book, where I was like becoming more like promoted, or like I really wanted to get my hands on that thing and feel like, so I'm thinking about needling stomach 37, right? But I want to feel the whole stomach meridian at that, from the popliteal fossa or whatever down to the ankle, right? I want to feel the whole thing, and I want to see if there's any changes. Because when you read that book or you listen to some of those practitioners, they'll tell you about like very, I mean, their level of feeling is so much higher than mine would ever be, where they're like describing tiny little chunks of like a rice bead and a noodle and a soggy this and that, and it's in the channel and I can feel it here. Like I'm probably not even there yet. But you can definitely, like when I was as blind, like earlier on in practice, when I was as blind as I was or as dumb as I was to this thing, you can still feel tension, right? You can still feel like, oh, this stomach 36, it feels like it's good, right? But I moved down to like stomach 38, stomach 40. I'm feeling a lot more tension here. Is this a thing? Is this a thing I'm looking for? And so literally just practicing with that. And for some people, if it was too complicated or I just had time and I wanted to, maybe I would feel a whole bunch of meridians, maybe just the antique points, right? I'd poke around the small intestine meridian. I don't even know if the person's diagnosis is going to like lead me in that direction or not, but maybe I'm going to try to like figure out all these things. So really it was important for me to just try it. And then another thing that was back in regards to pulse diagnosis for me. So I think I'm dumb. Like I think there's part of me that I'm a bad communicator and I don't really learn from other people as well as I do as sitting with a book and then experimenting with shit on my own. And so reading the 27 or 28 pulse characteristics for me and listening to them from the teacher at the time, that was like super difficult. Like, and I don't think it's the teacher's fault or the book's fault. I think I'm dumb, right? So they're like describing a wiry pulse and I'm like, they said it was wiry, but I don't really feel it. So I remember super early on redefining pulse characteristics in my own way, right? And so I would go through, and if the teacher said, oh, this is the hallmark of a choppy pulse, not only would I write down like what I felt, but I would also write down all of the symptoms that the person was exhibiting, right? Because I wanted to know, like, is anybody coming in with a period stagnation going to have a choppy pulse kind of thing? And am I going to feel this exact thing the next time the pulse is perfectly choppy? So redefining things in a manner that made more sense to me, and then taking that and moving that into the realm of meridian palpation was really helpful to me. I don't know if it'll work for other people, but it worked out for me pretty well.
I don't think I've ever asked you this, but how did you feel about the movie The Last Jedi?
Hang on. Is this the third one or is that the second one?
The second one.
The second one.
This was Luke alone on an island.
It's a dumpster fire. I couldn't stand that fucking movie. And it felt like such wasted time for me. And I was not a huge Disney fan before having a daughter, but I'm a huge fucking Disney fan at this point. And I'm just so let down that they either rushed it or just didn't.
But speaking of epic failures, I feel like one of the themes or one of the attempted themes of The Last Jedi was failure. Everyone was fucking failing in that movie. It was almost like a comedy of errors, but you had...
Especially John Boyega.
Yeah, it's like They tried to get the Codebreaker, and they failed. John Boyega tried to sacrifice himself, and he failed. Even they tried, Ex Machina tried to do a mutiny against purple-haired Jurassic Park lady in a prom dress, and failed.
Failed.
Rey tried to get Kylo Ren to come over, and she fucking failed. And then at the end, if you didn't get it, Yoda comes out and tells you straight up the theme of this movie is...
is failure.
Is failure. And that we need to pass on the lessons of our failures. That it's our destiny that our students will become greater than us because we've taught them all our failures. Tell me about your failures. Where are some times you failed with Chinese medicine?
Do you want to end in like... like practice of treatment on the or person on the table, or do you want it in like business?
Any
or where
of them.
Do you want it? Because I fail fucking everywhere. Every path that I've gone down, there have been failures.
Let's start with the medicine and patients. How have you?
So, I don't enjoy spending a lot of time with the patient. I'm not the tries to get out of the room as quickly as possible. But I do attempt to, like, do my job and get out and let them have their, like, privacy on the table so they can do their thing for however many minutes I give them, right? So I think the first failure that I experienced as a normal reoccurring habit was approaching things too cavalier, pretending – or, like, not pretending, but thinking that I knew it straightforward off the bat – attacking it too aggressively and then not holding space for the patient. I think the longer that I've been in this practice, I notice, because so in the good book, The Neijing, there might be a line in there somewhere that says something to the effect of like all disease originates in emotion, right? And when you're a baby Chinese medical practitioner, this is like, yeah, I believe that. You stepped off the curb and sprained your ankle and it was because you were angry about something. I can see that as being realistic. The longer that I've been in practice, the more true I have seen this become, in which I will see, and maybe they did, maybe they have trauma for no reason, right? They a piano fell on them. But they're coming to you because the problem's not getting better most of the time. And I can see a lot of that being the overall disharmony in the person that might even existed before this current set of symptomology came up. And before I noticed this as a reoccurring normal thing within my diagnostic set, I was not holding enough time for the patient, holding enough time for the space, listening to the patient. And I mean that in that creepy Worsley five element way of listening to the, like, listen to the patient and they're going to tell you they're a fire element and you need to do fire points kind of way. So I would say that that's probably the first thing that I noticed. Now I got to think of the second thing that I noticed, but guarantee there's been failure there too.
How about in business? You mentioned business. How have you failed in business, business-wise?
So in business, I am extremely bad in all things in life. I'm extremely bad in boundaries. I'm like beyond horrible about it. And I think, so if I can give myself maybe a Chinese medical diagnosis – or a constitutional diagnosis for people that believe in that kind of thing. I think I'm Earth. Like, I have tummy problems and I'm round and I like love pottery and eating and taking care of people and the color yellow and like all these things, right?
You sing a lot too.
I do. Yeah, I do hum and sing and whistle. Like, there is no shortage of heat coming out of my Yangming either way, either hole. And so I think that one of the things that I will never learn that is right in front of me is I'm really bad with boundaries, like extremely horrible. And in business, I allow things to get to where I try to please people instead of delineating very strict boundaries. And I think business is one of those places where we need to be more wood. I wouldn't say metal, but I'd say more wood. Like, you have to be extremely organized. You have to have things delineated, written out. I need that sign on the wall to point to when like goals aren't met or things aren't done correctly, because as at least within my constitution, I find it very difficult to do that, and I let things go on for too long. And this is 100% of the time my mistake. I think that's probably the biggest lesson within business that I've learned.
Do you have any examples of that when you had poor boundaries?
Yeah, you know, like, so I've allowed, and this is not about Nicholas Stetchnowski. So I've allowed some of our workers, employees, partners, whatever you want to call them, to like live with us, like when they had hard times. So I would, so if they got like out of their relationship or kicked out of their home or that kind of thing, I'll take you in. I'll take care. I'll fucking feed you. I've got a roof to put over your head, that kind of thing. And I think that makes the boundary of friend and business partner blurred in such a way that it makes it dramatically unhelpful when that person needs something or has problems with an issue, or you need something or have problems. You can't approach it from a business standpoint where you can say like, hey, as a business, you can't do this thing, or you need to do this thing, right? And this is how it is. And like, not that I'm your boss, but this is like a realistic business thing. There's my boundaries disappearing before my eyes again. But that led to a lot of issues for me. And it's like a repeated kind of problem where I'm like, I'm going to like try to take care. I'm going to save these people, right? I think this is like a savior complex kind of thing in which I need that like giant big company CEO mentality of like, fuck all you all. You all are here to make money and do this thing. Cause that's how you run a business. That's how you run a successful business. And I'm happy that I do not act that way, but there are definitely lessons to be learned and valuable things for me to take from that.
Any boundary issues with patients?
Yeah, no, horrendously. So I think that it's really easy if a patient comes to you and they say, for instance, that whatever the problem is, they have X and they've had X for like 15 years and it defines their entire life and it ruins everything. And no doctor has ever been able to fix it and all this shit. And they come to you and you're like, oh yeah, X is this thing. And this is like fucking day and night in my world. And here's this one point or this one herb and X miraculously disappears. If you don't have a good boundary, you've done got yourself a barnacle. And I've got like bunch of barnacles on my ship. And so I'll have people that try to immediately, like once you've saved them or made a really good impression on them, let's put it that way. They are like your new best friend, your biggest champion. They're going to like bring you coffee and they're going to like do all these things. And if you allow them to do it, it just gets more and more difficult to dig yourself out of that grave. Yeah, no, that's a horrible one. And I still do that too, because I have no boundaries. I can't figure out why my wife is still with me.
How about the opposite of failure? Have you had situations where you're like, holy shit, I can't believe that worked?
I mean, I think that's a pretty normal thing in every practitioner's everyday. Like me and Karen often say to each other, like, I can't believe people pay us for this shit. Actually, that's usually in response to like when she needles me and it hurts real bad and I tell her to go fuck herself. And then I'm like, God, I can't believe people pay us to do this shit. And they pay us really fucking well. But no, like every
I tell
day,
these fuckers to drink flying squirrel feces and ground up cockroaches, and they pay me for this shit.
I fed a guy scorpions yesterday, and he was like, I can cook it at home. And I'm like, are you a pussy? And he's like, excuse me? I'm like, are you a fucking pussy? Because there's bugs in here. And if you return this shit, somebody needs these bugs and they're hard to get. Don't waste my fucking bugs. Like legitimately had that conversation. But yeah, no, God, you got to be careful with that.
So I don't know, any like miraculous results or any times you're like?
I mean, I think that anybody that's practiced acupuncture for any amount of time has to have some like really non-humbling badass success story. I'm like trying to think of like maybe what my most recent one was or the one that was like the most surprising to me. Karen, what's a really, can you hear me? She's on a fucking podcast.
No, what?
Hey, what's my most recent huge success story?
For like a treatment?
Yeah. And I guess part of this is me just saying like, this just fucking happens all the time. This is every fucking person that comes and sees me.
I mean, I like that guy who like comes in for show woo all the time and he looks like.
That's not me though. That's show woo. That's yeah. Show woo's doing it.
It wasn't.
He literally came with white hair and then like 6 weeks later came back jet fucking black. I'm like, is that dyed?
Was it just Hushu? Was it like Shouwu Chur or was it just straight up Hushu?
I don't do Shouwu Chur. It was just straight up Shouwu. And like, he's like, I want to be really aggressive with this. And I'm like, how do you feel about getting a blood panel every 3 months to watch for your liver enzymes getting thrown? I don't know. We see like miraculous shit literally happen all the time, but it's always the little tiny things that blow my mind, right? Like, when the people with Bell's palsy face moves on the table, that's always like, fuck, this shit really works. Cause there's a part of me, there's like a Patrick in the back of my head where the patient comes in and they've got whatever, they've got back pain. And they're like, do these things, my back hurts so bad. And you do your acupuncture. And in your first acupuncture class, they tell you, you're going to fucking give people acupuncture. They're going to come in with back pain. And they're going to leave walking straight right up. And they're going to be so fucking happy. But in real life, it's like 9 of the people come in a day with back pain. And they leave like, I hope this shit gets better because it's so fucking rough. And now I just hurt more from where you've stabbed me repeatedly. And there's a part of me in my – there's a Patrick in the back of my head that says, fuck, I hope it's just going to get better on its own anyways. And that time corresponded with the time that they came in here. But then they get fucking better. And it's fucking wild. Like, that shit blows my mind every day. So, I can't think of what my most – like, and we've had some crazy fucking stories out of our clinic. Like, I'm sure you know more of them than I do at this point. But there's like, the miraculous shit happens so consistently – but still, like, it happens every day, but still, every single time, I'm like, fuck, man. Whoever gave this shit to us, aliens or ancient Chinese people or whatever, it's a fucking real thing. It blows my mind.
So a lot of people talk about imposter syndrome. You've been doing this for, like, 10 years now. Do you still get imposter syndrome? Or do you, like,
you know,
I know what the fuck I'm doing?
No, you know, I think that maybe I have split personality or I'm a sociopath or there's some kind of diagnosis in there for me. But I would say that when I look back at my short-lived career in Chinese medicine, I think you could diagnose a lot of it as imposter syndrome. But in the same time, I'm in that trench doing those treatments every day and repeating the result kind of thing, right? So to me, yeah, like there's some times where I'm like, yeah, I like feel like I'm, am I really going to be able to help this person? Am I just faking it to make it kind of scenario? But in the same token, you know, this person's on their own path, on their own journey. They've come to you because they're just looking for the next best thing. And sometimes you're it. And sometimes your shitty level of knowledge, you drank rum smoothies in the back of fucking Warren's class and didn't pay attention and you were wasted the whole time. Sometimes you got one little nugget that's going to fix that person.
Well, that was going to be my next thing about a lot of people have this saying, fake it till you make it. Like, especially when you're in a first semester intern, you're like, I don't feel very confident about myself. People are like, just fake it till you make it. That pretend you're confident and other people will believe you. And I feel like there's this problem that some people hold on to this attitude for like 20 fucking years.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like that there are a lot of other practitioners who are just still faking it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but in every field, right? Like my mechanic, I think that motherfucker fakes it. My dentist for sure. But I've definitely run into a lot of practitioners where I'm like, I think that you're operating at a low level of the medicine, like philosophically. However, you're like, you know, you're doing something that is working like 4 times out of 10 or whatever. So you're like, you're paying your bills and doing your thing. And while I think that's wrong, I mean, I think that describes most of humanity.
So how would you describe someone operating at a low level when we say like the inferior practitioner? Like, are these the people who are like, I'm going to do the insomnia protocol. I'm going to do Miriam Lee's 10 points. Is that what we mean by low level practitioners as opposed
you
to
know,
someone who understands the Qi Hua?
And I don't think that I understand the Qi Hua 100%, but maybe like 49% or something. So I like refuse to – I'll talk shit about people. I refuse to talk shit about the like 12 miraculous points of whoever, the 10 famous points of this guy or whatever, the 11 points of whatever. Because at the end of the day, I think that there are multiple systems and overlaid approaches within Chinese medicine, right? You've got Zongfu needling, you've got five element needling, you've got Worsley five element needling, Japanese needling, Korean needling, hand needling, face needling, all the other stuff, right? So if you pick at random 11 points, all spread all across the body and say that they're like heavenly star points or whatever, you probably, there's one of them is going to be on the affected meridian, right? So there's part of me that believes that if you have that practitioner that's like, I only do these 10 points on every single person and X amount out of 10 patients get better and my percentage is pretty good, right? So they're helping those people, right? I believe that that person's like operating under like a low level of knowledge within the medicine, or they're doing the medicine an injustice kind of thing, because I would rather there be more practitioners who study more, read more, keep up with it more, and try to make a very direct, specific diagnosis and miss the point, right? But are carrying on the lineage of this medicine for the future. They're like helping promote that knowledge to be out there, but they might be missing the point rather than somebody just doing the same 10 points on 100 people a week. So I think that exists a lot. I think at the end of the day, though, that some people are gravitating towards that practitioner and getting that treatment that helps them. And whether or not that's fate or luck, that's not for me to decide. But that's not, I don't know that that's necessarily like a bad thing for the overarching story that is Chinese medicine. You know, I want a very specific thing, but I'm not right about everything. Just most of it.
Well, I feel like that was a thing that like in chapter 20-something of the Nanjing, it's talking about different diagnostic things and talks, oh, the superior practitioner uses all three, the mediocre practitioner uses two, the inferior practitioner uses only one diagnostic method. But then it was like the inferior practitioner will heal 6 out of 10 patients. The mediocre practitioner will heal 8 out of 10 patients. The superior practitioner will heal 9 out of 10 patients. And I was like, well, fuck, even if I'm an inferior practitioner, right? I'm still getting 60%. That's better than some of our Western meds. I can charge $80 an hour for 60% results.
Absolutely. And you're still moving cheap. And that's the thing. Like sometimes you've got to sit there and think that maybe the thing that's making a huge difference between allopathic medicine and other forms, Chinese medicine, whatever, is like actually just the qi hua, right? And sometimes it's just the qi's not moving. And sometimes it doesn't fucking matter what point you choose. You might think that the person, oh, they've got a yangming headache. I'm going to needle the yangming point for the face. I'm going to needle Li4. I'm a fucking badass here. And maybe it was, that was the perfect pathomechanism and thing for you to delineate out of it. And maybe Li4 is just like they had a fucking cyst on their large intestine and your point treated it and you had no fucking clue, but you happened to move qi. So I think that happens a lot and I'm not upset about that. And I want that to happen to me, right? When I pick some fucking obscure ass point, UB7, I'll needle on somebody. I hope it's just a fucking qi problem.
Do you want to take a pee-pee break?
Sure, you can. I mean, yeah. I do you need to? I've got to.
Yeah, I need to. So perfect. You want to come back in like 5? Yeah.
This episode can be downloaded at podcast.tcmstudy.net/session10. As always, special thank you to the Patreon members for supporting this podcast. If you'd like to join them in their support, you can go to podcast.tcmstudy.net and click on the donate button at the top. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.